Yeah, I mean, it was really about, you know, what we just talked about, escaping this, I guess for me specifically, growing up in Kansas, the perspective that is a Kansan or a Midwesterner. You know, and the whole goal with that one, the whole message behind that one was just feeling like I love where I'm from. I love Kansas. I love Kansas City. I love Missouri as well. I mean, might as well claim Missouri as well, given KC is literally on the border. I love where I'm from. You know, I've learned so much from where I'm from. But it's really about me wanting more, you know. Like there's so much out there. The world's really large, and I just needed to grow. And so that first project was really about loving and respecting where I come from, but it was a message saying it's time for more, it's time to grow.
The paradox.
And escaping the paradox that is a Midwest sort of perspective and way of life.
All right.
What's up, my man?
Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, books, we got a special guest here. A very special guest coming off his second album. We have the Electric Gypsy himself, the one in the flares, the Keelan Van.
I appreciate you for having me, man. Yeah. Seriously.
Of course, man. Thank you for being here. And you're coming off of a huge accomplishment in your second album, Tales of a Gypsy, out now on all streaming platforms. Let's talk about that project right off the rip.
Man, let me tell you, it was very experimental. I've been telling a lot of folks that have listened and supported me from the get-go, from the first album. And the first album was very contemporary, with a touch of musicianship in it. Like it was very modern and pop and contemporary, but it had a taste of the classics in it. The second one, excuse me while I'm trying to warm up to it. It's cold outside.
You know? You're good.
But no, the second one was very experimental. I didn't want to make a project that was like too contemporary anymore, that catered to a specific demographic or something like that. It was more true to me than the first one. Very psychedelic, very soul, rock, blues influenced. And I did it all on my own this time too, which was very exciting. You know, wrote the music, played the instruments, mixed it, produced it. So I'm super excited. And it's also adding more music to the set list for performing live. So that's the beautiful thing. So I'm excited,
man. Yeah. And if there's anyone who's not familiar with your music, I feel like your music almost has an already comes with like an innate experimentalness to it, just because of where music is right now, especially like with people our generation and stuff. You have a very electric vibe, the electric guitar. If anyone's seen this guy play, absolutely shreds. And like, what does, you know, contemporary even mean to you? And like, what does experimental mean to you?
Well, I think contemporary means what's in the popular eye. So specific sound, or I guess more specifically, a type of production. Like nowadays, in my opinion, you hear a lot of, well, it used to be a lot of auto-tune and that sort of thing, but if anyone out there is into mixing at all, producing, you'll know what, like, phasing and, you know, like, stacking vocals and a lot of ambient sounds in terms of vocal production and stuff like that. You see a lot of that in pop culture nowadays, music, and, you know, a lot of synth, over-processed vocals, and I wanted to strip it back for the second project and do something a bit more intimate and classic. So it was, you know, a lot of effects like slap delay on the vocal, raw guitar, not too much reverb and stuff like that on the guitar. Well, also, I guess nowadays too, in pop music, you don't really hear a lot of the guitar mm-hmm. as well. So I want to be one of the guys who can sort of bring that back and make guitar prominent
right.
in music. So right. I'm a singer primarily. I always say that because I'm self-taught on mm-hmm. the guitar. It's literally just an expression of my voice.
Yeah.
What I can't sing, I'll just play on the yeah. guitar. And, you know, that's really the goal with that, man, you know.
Right. So I feel like that's almost like you can immediately feel it in Tales of Gypsy with that opening song, Olivia.
Olivia.
Yeah, where it comes in and it has that energy where the lyrics definitely, you know, they're definitely hitting in a spot where, like, I can feel where you are, what you're talking about, what you're experiencing, but there is that shift.
I had to get my heart broken.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And then you have this shift where it's like, okay, now the guitar is talking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's that, honestly, I'm glad you like that one too, because mm-hmm. that one is, I mean, they're all my babies, but that is the song that I'm most proud of out mm-hmm. of every piece that I've put out thus far. And it's very emotional, and it was the first song that I think, but I feel like this is it.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of, you know, me recording and writing and doing everything mm-hmm. on my own, that was the one where I was like, okay.
Yeah.
I think I can do this.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I don't know, I just love the way it builds. Like, it starts really psychedelic.
Yeah.
To open the album, which, by the way, has a really psychedelic-looking mm-hmm. album cover with me on it.
Yeah.
And I think it really is a testament to the, what's the word I'm looking for? Just the psychedelic sort of nature of yeah, what I was going
like
for.
Like the aura.
Yes.
Yeah. 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 Definitely. And why don't tell me like where you were when this song was kind of like being formed. Like, how do you even go about building a song like that? You said that you had to get your heart broken first.
Yeah, I had to get my heart broken. But uh-huh. but with most songs, for me, I don't like to force a song. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, anyone can sit down and put a few chords together and some words together on a piece of paper, and but I don't like to force it, man. You mm-hmm. know? I like the stuff that's given to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes I have to sit back and you know, when it's literally a gift from above, literally, mm-hmm. you know, ideas will come, mm-hmm. and stuff just happens. And that was one of those. And I actually wrote it a long time ago, actually.
Right.
Probably a year now at this point. And, you know, you just stick with it. Like, mm-hmm. when it came to me, I knew that it was something there. There was something there.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, the song just grows.
Right.
It builds and it evolves and you add more and more to it. And, like, if I showed you the rough draft from it initially, you can see the guitar part kind mm-hmm. of, it's really prominent. But the extra layers, that stuff took time before
right.
I actually recorded it. It was a year before I actually recorded it.
Right.
So. But yeah, man, you know.
So do you have, like, words on page, and then do you, like, leave sections where you're like, I'm going to just discover that with the guitar? Or are you writing your guitar into your songs?
I think it depends on the song.
Okay.
Some songs almost start out like spoken word mm-hmm. or poetry, and I'll start with the lyrics. And some, you know, I'll hear a riff or mm-hmm. a chord progression in my head, and I'll lay it down. It just really depends on what the song is asking for. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like I said, you can't force it. Whatever comes, comes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't sit down each day and say, I want to write two songs today, and blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? That's not how it works for me.
Right.
It's this sort of strange space that you go to.
Yeah.
We've talked about that before, too, and
mm-hmm.
in any sort of art,
mm-hmm.
not just music, but there's this creative space, this creative high that you go on when you're working on a project that you feel, like you can feel it in your core, in your
yeah.
soul, like there's something here.
Right.
And you just stick to it, and whatever mm-hmm. happens, happens, you know?
Yeah.
Honestly, you kind of black out.
Yeah.
And that's what happened with that one and a few of the other ones on the album, so.
Yeah. It's pure expression, like when you can't put everything you're feeling into words or
yeah.
even to action, you just need to put it somewhere.
I was watching an interview of Hendrix, of course,
uh-huh.
Recently, and he was saying something about not being the best with his words speaking. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm that way. I mean, I feel like I'm good with my words, but in terms of like expressing what I feel or what I mean,
right?
I'm not always the best at that.
Yeah.
Music is my one outlet for that. Mm-hmm. That's when I can really speak and let people know how I feel.
Right.
I
mean? So tell us how you really feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about Jimmy real quick because, you know, you are definitely, we've talked about this all the time, that you're one of your ideals is that, you know, study the greats, study the ones that come before you, honor the ones that come before you. Mm-hmm. Where did you first hear Jimmy and your guys that that inspire you and made you feel like this is something that I want to do?
Well, funny enough, because I haven't always been a guitar, rock and roll, psychedelic rock kind of guy.
Mm.
I grew up on like soul and Motown and R&B and that kind of stuff.
Right.
Because, you know, like I said, I'm primarily a singer.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually wasn't until Jimmy's actually my most recent biggest influence.
Mm-hmm.
Before him, it was guys like Michael Jackson and Prince.
Right.
And also Lenny Kravitz is another another recent one. You know, Stevie Wonder, guys like that. Jimmy wasn't until maybe 2019. And when, I mean, I'd always known who he was, but I never dove into his music because I was into other stuff at the time. And when I heard Jimmy, especially nowadays, you don't hear that kind of stuff nowadays.
Yeah.
It's music that is kind of misunderstood from a lot of folks in this generation, I think. But if you really dive into it, it's like time traveling, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it you really feel like you're in the 60s, 70s. You know?
Right.
And it just changed my life. It changed everything about me.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you said something about learning and studying the greats. And I was going to bring up something about my aesthetic. Because, you know, there are those out there who might be a bit judgmental with how I present myself as an artist.
Mm-hmm.
This goes for anyone who has huge influences in the arts.
Right.
And it's not that I'm like trying to copy
my
influences. If you know the arts as an artist yourself, you know that there's this thing that we do where we leave breadcrumbs, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, for folks who might not know Hendrix or Prince or Lenny, if I leave breadcrumbs as to who my influences are, folks who listen to my music and don't know who they are can follow the breadcrumbs that I left and discover them because of me, because they're some of my influences. And that's the beautiful thing. You know, that's how you keep their art and your art alive.
Right.
And it just keeps it going. It's like a, I'm not that accomplished or established yet, but it is sort of like a passing of the torch kind of thing.
It is. You're definitely carrying a legacy. And I think that's really cool because, I mean, we can all go listen to your album and listen to your music. I have had the honor to see you play live multiple times and had the honor to capture it. And I will say that you mentioned time traveling, that like when I go to a Keelan Van show, that's what it feels like. It feels like I've time traveled back into the 60s or some sort of like psychedelic weirdness.
I must be doing my job then if that's the case. I appreciate you, man.
Yeah, I definitely like, and you know, those guys received plenty of criticism on how they presented themselves and how they dressed and how they kind of carried themselves. And then,
but at the end of the day, man, it's not about other people's opinions of you. I mean, at the end of the day, it's more than just music for me. It's it's art, man.
Yeah.
I try to express myself in all facets of my creative self. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, you know, if the naysayers say, do this, you know, who cares?
Yeah.
I also think that's another prominent issue with this generation. I'm always taught, I feel like I'm, you know, in my 60s or 70s or 80s, like
right.
when older people say, and I love them to death, but they'll say stuff like, this generation, blah, 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 back in my day, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, seriously, though, there's something about that music from back then.
Mm-hmm.
I have to keep it alive.
Right.
I have to keep it alive.
Yeah. And I think part of it is that, you know, we are so exposed to other people's art. We're so, like, exposed all the time to like right now, the pop, the you know, this generation's sound right now. And I think, because I, as someone who's also drawn to that time period and have always talked, I've talked on here a few times about like the Beatnik writers and the 60s and Jimi Hendrix, it's not the first time he's come up on this podcast. Like, there's something to be said about like that time period where there was no social media, there was no constant like sharing and back and forth of the same old, and obviously they had their influences and they changed to themselves, but I do feel like there was a part that it's not gone, but it's harder to be completely authentically yourself today.
Yeah.
Because we have so many different influences.
And that's what I was going to say. I kind of lost my train of thought when I responded a second ago. This generation, because of the effects of social media, et cetera, et cetera, everyone is constantly trying to please people. And you lose yourself trying to please other people.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it sounds a bit off to say, but you have to please yourself first and foremost with whatever you do in life, not just music, whatever you do in life. You can't go through life pleasing other people. You won't be satisfied. You won't find screw happiness. You won't find peace, man.
Yeah.
It's about peace. You have to be satisfied with what you're doing, with what you create, with how you live your life, with who you are. If you can't do that, then what are you doing? I mean, you get one life.
Yeah.
You get one life.
Yeah.
Are you going to live your life pleasing other people, or are you going to be satisfied with who you are? You know what I mean?
Yeah. That sounds a lot like a song you got on your album right now. Live your life how you want to.
Oh, live the way you want to.
Live the way you want to.
Yeah, that one, see what I mean? They're all my babies. I mean, I love that one too. Because, I mean, the lyric in that one is, what's the opening lyric? Ain't got the patience, ain't got the time. For all you suckers trying to kill my vibe. Simple-minded people, if you want to take my individuality, you got to take my life. You got to live the way you want to. So, yeah, man. Yeah. Well, I guess that's a testament to, I pride myself in my lyrics.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people stick to the guitar because I kind of put the guitar thing out there, but I started out on the acoustic, man, singer-songwriter kind of stuff. So I'm very lyrically focused if you folks out there pay attention to the lyrics, and I'm really proud of that one too.
Yeah, we were talking about that one last night, and about you feel like that's your like your crowd pleaser, your sing-along sound to the one. Did you have that in mind when you were crafting that song, or is that another one of those expressions that, you know,
just sort of came to
just
me?
Just sort of came.
It was a bit of both. It came to me because the chord progression is a bit odd, and usually the songs that are gifts like that one, they usually sound a bit odd because I have no idea the music theory behind it, but the chord progression is weird, so it was a gift, but at the same time, I did write it in a way that was very kind of structured, verse, chorus, bridge out, or, you know, you section it out, might have a section for a guitar solo, that thing, you know. It was very meticulously sort of written. First verse, heavily focused on the lyrics, and then literally live the way you want to gets repeated several times. That's obviously the chorus section. So it was a gift, but it was also very meticulously structured. That was very intentional. So, yeah.
Yeah. Tell me, because you just said about how you started off on acoustic and stuff like that. Was that in 2019? Is that when you started?
No, I've been playing guitar for, since 2015. So it was December of 2015. Actually, my dad gave me my first guitar. He got me my first guitar. And he was a saxophone guy. So, of course, it was my dad. You know, being the musician that he was. And, but, you know, back then I was listening to guys like, because like I told you, before that, I grew up on vocal stuff. So, like soul and vocally focused music, R&B and Motown, that kind of stuff. When I picked up the acoustic, that's when I sort of switched over to, and that's when I began evolving for the first time, I think. And that's when I discovered guys like Ed Sheeran, Mm-hmm. And John Mayer, of course.
Yeah.
I love his acoustic stuff, honestly, more than his electric stuff, because it's mm-hmm. it's so, it's singer-songwriter, but it's just so unorthodox at the mm-hmm. same time. Guys on the keys, like, well, I guess he didn't play keys, but that first album, In the Lonely Hour, mm-hmm. Sam Smith, very mm-hmm. intimate and acoustic.
Yeah.
Piano, but acoustic. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, just, Tracy Chapman.
Mm-hmm.
I got into Dylan.
Yeah.
Back then, Bob Dylan. You know, a lot of the acoustic stuff. But then I started to play the acoustic because I wanted more. I started to play it as if it was an electric, and I was doing a lot of stuff with my fingers. And, of course, that's when I stumbled upon Hendrix.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, I got to get an electric because the acoustic, it just wasn't cutting it for what I was trying to do.
Right.
As I was evolving again.
Right.
Into more heavy guitar focused kind of music.
Right. So,
yeah.
That reminded me, I remember talking to you when we were first, when we first met, we were talking about you went to school on a football scholarship. Mm. And you were playing D2?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, D2 football. And you said that every day, like after practice, that you would also come home and start playing guitar.
Yeah, it was honestly a problem.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't too much time on my hands. I mean, I did that in high school, too, when I was playing the acoustic. And well, I guess I was playing the acoustic in college, too.
Mm-hmm.
But, that regimen was insane.
Yeah.
I'm talking, you know, for any college athlete, you know what it's like with like two-a-days and practices and traveling and
right.
games and, you know, going to class and yeah. study hall and blah, blah, blah. You know, it was insane. 5:30 a.m. workouts in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go to the calf and get breakfast, go to class afterwards. And then you got practice at the end of the day. Around probably somewhere between 2 and 5 p.m. Yeah. And then you study afterwards for a few hours, eat dinner. Study hall, I think, was after that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's late. And at that point, you're probably working on actual homework or papers or
right.
assignments as opposed to just studying, right? So it would be probably like 11 to midnight that I'd start playing the guitar and just working on my craft.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, it's at least 2 a.m. and I have to get up the next morning for 5:30 a.m. workouts. I'm talking a couple hours of sleep.
Yeah.
And this was consistent. It was insane. I don't know what was going through my mind, but it paid off.
I think, you know. No, it definitely did.
Yeah.
It's paying off right now. I mean, it's such a testament to your craft already that, like, I mean, the schedule of a student athlete is already insane. It's already two jobs, being an athlete and being a student.
I didn't even mention that I was a part of the choral music program there, too. That's right. What it was. So I was a part of the choir.
Uh-huh.
And I went to William Jewell, by the way,
mm-hmm.
in Liberty, Missouri,
uh-huh.
On football scholarship. But I went there because it's a prestigious institution academically as well,
mm-hmm.
and especially their choral music program.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they gave me the opportunity to be a part of, because they're both talent sort of focused activities.
Yeah.
On campus. And, you know, being a part of the choir is also a heavy task.
Right.
Plus playing sports.
Yeah.
And all the other stuff. So I really don't know how I did that. But
yeah. But here you are at age 25 putting out your second album. Yeah. And I know a lot of people who are just getting their first EP out there, let alone their second album. I think, like, we've talked about it before, but that work ethic and just that structure, I think, you know, has definitely shown up in how you work at your craft and how you put stuff out there. I don't really know how you did that.
Well, I just think it's, yes, it is work ethic, but at the end of the day, you got to love it. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? If you love it enough, if you're passionate enough about it, you're going to put in the time. You don't right. really consider it work or practice.
Mm-hmm.
You're just, you know, me being up that late and then having workouts the next morning was me finding time for my creative space that I could not help but have.
Right.
You know what I mean? If I wasn't doing that, what did we just say a second ago? I wouldn't have been at peace.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I had to do that stuff.
Yeah.
So
when did you know, like, because obviously you're successful at football. You know, D2 scholarship is nothing to sneeze at. That is success in my eyes. And where was the moment where you're like, music is what I'm going for. Music is what I'm striving to be.
I've always known.
Okay.
That it was music. I was always good at sports, but first of all, the sports version of myself is a version of myself that no longer exists. Mm. I've always known that it was music. And I loved football, like, to my core.
Yeah.
But I never had aspirations of, like, going to the NFL or playing Canadian football or Arena League or whatever it is. You know, like, it was an opportunity to get to school and to get an education. And to also, like I said, I took that scholarship because of the choral music program as well.
Yeah.
And it was a chance to get there, you know, because I also, when I was a part of the choir at Jewel, we also put out a couple albums at the institution, and we toured the UK and Scotland.
Wow.
So we went to London and Grantham and Edinburgh and, you know, Scotland.
Yeah.
You know, had I not went to Jewel, I might not have had that opportunity.
Yeah.
So, and it was a learning experience for me. And when I say that program is insane, in a good way, by the way, I just learned so much. And the educators there in the music program were, like I said, I don't know much theory, but the way that I approach music is definitely due to a few of the professors that I had at school. I think I've always had music in me, but it was sort of guided practice and guided learning
with him,
you know, educating me on certain things.
Yeah.
It's hard to explain because, like I said, I don't know theory, but there's just certain things in music that I now understand more because
of him. Yeah, what was it like getting overseas?
You can't really put it into words. If someone's not been overseas or traveled much, you can't really explain it.
Uh-huh.
You know? I mean, going to a different state is one thing, but it's a culture shock when you go to a completely different country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, everything is different. I mean, the moment you get off that plane, it doesn't even look the same.
Yeah.
The grass is different. The animals look different. You know,
yeah.
The cows. Literally, we drove by a few farms and the cows didn't even look the same.
Yeah.
The architecture, excuse me.
And the infrastructure.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, everything was just different. So it's like you're on this just constant high every time you turn your head. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was insane. And honestly, it was great for my perspective.
Mm-hmm.
The world is much larger than we realize.
Yeah.
Much larger. And that's why I'm so adamant about, you know, telling folks to be themselves, because again, why are you trying to please a certain group of people instead of yourself? Because the world is way too large to, can I cuss on here?
Yeah, of course.
To give a damn about what anybody has to say within this certain mile radius.
Right.
The world is way too big.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
I feel like on your first project alone, like, that makes sense to me. Just the title alone with the sunflower paradox. Mm. Just the awareness of, like, looking at Kansas as this, like, sunflower paradox that was super cool when I first saw, because I was actually, I came to your, before we even really knew each other, I came with a friend to your album launch party.
Oh, you were there?
Yeah, yeah.
We didn't know each other back then, but oh, you were there. Yeah.
I stopped by and I got to, I think I met a couple relatives or something. I like shook hands with some people, but it was definitely, I remember like listening to that album the next day, and as someone who didn't know you, I was like, this is a level of awareness that I wasn't really expecting to come like on that album. I really loved the Sunflower Paradox. I really just loved that concept.
Yeah, I mean, it was really about, you know, what we just talked about, escaping this I guess for me specifically, growing up in Kansas, the perspective that is a Kansan or a Midwesterner, you know, and the whole goal with that one, the whole message behind that one was just feeling like I love where I'm from. I love Kansas. I love Kansas City. I love Missouri as well. I mean, might as well claim them, Missouri as well, given KC is literally on the border.
Yeah.
I love where I'm from. You know, I've learned so much from where I'm from. But it's really about me wanting more, you know, like there's so much out there. The world's really large and I just needed to grow. And so that first project was really about loving and respecting where I come from, but it was a message saying it's time for more. It's time to grow.
Yeah. The paradox.
And escaping the paradox that is a Midwest sort of perspective and way of life.
Loving where you are, loving where you come from, but also acknowledging that it's time to maybe move on, maybe expand the horizons.
And that's not necessarily saying that I'm going anywhere anytime soon. It's just saying, like I said, in terms of perspective, you want out of life.
Right.
You know, I don't plan on giving up my hopes and dreams and working a 9-to-5 and, you know, working construction or working a warehouse gig for 40 years and then retire. And then I'm on my deathbed wishing I had tried to do something that I knew that I loved. You know what I mean? That's one of my biggest fears is like, which is, it might be a bit radical, but I think it's very valid. I do not want to be on my deathbed saying, I wish I would have done this.
Yeah.
That is not a good way to go.
No.
You
know what I mean? I don't think that's radical at all. I think, I mean, maybe it's radical to some people in that 1 mile radius, but I mean, the wherewithal to just peek a few years down the road and be like, okay, where would I be to make me feel at peace, to make me feel happy? I think is definitely, I mean, that's such a priceless trait to have that, you know, it's rare, but
I would just be the hippie in me.
I would say, the Sunflower Paradox has my favorite Keelan Van track, Have a Good Time.
Oh yeah. The funk track.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That one's my favorite track of yours.
Thank you.
Yeah. Tell me about that. How'd that come to be?
That one is cause I'm actually a sad boy at heart.
Man. Right.
Dig. Cause listen, first of all, when I wrote that song, I was not in a good spot. I wrote that song because I wanted to have something out that was positive, because I was always writing sad music.
Yeah.
So that one actually was kind of forced. Because I just wanted to write something happy.
Right.
Literally, I came up with the idea. I was, you know, sometimes I get sent, you know, a melody or a lyric or something. And I guess the one thing that was sent from that to me was have a good time as a topic. Because sometimes I'll write down topics to write about.
Yeah.
And then I'll forcefully try and write a song on that.
Yeah.
And it was have a good time because I was in a dark place, I think, back then. And I just wanted to have something out that was a positive sort of depiction of myself, even though I didn't feel that way.
Yeah.
And it turned out pretty good, in my opinion. You know, it's probably one of my favorite songs to play live, too.
Yeah.
I
think that's part of the reason that I love it so much, because I'm also a sad boy at heart. And
aren't most creators, though?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. And, and just, like, I feel like it comes across in the lyrics where it's like, man, let's just, why are we doing this? Like, let's just have a good time. Like,
no, literally. Yeah, that's man.
And so when, every time it comes on, every time you play it live, or what, it always, like, because we're usually out in a bar or a venue here in Kansas City, and it's like, yeah, that's right, let's have a good time.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
The opening lyric in that song, and I love it, I love that I did that, was loosen up and just enjoy the party. Feel the music in your bones. If you came to dance, get it started. Let the groove consume your soul. And then eventually gets to the have a good time.
Yeah.
Chorus section.
Yeah. And, the breakdown is sweet.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that breakdown. It reminds me of, I couldn't tell you where I saw this clip. It's a clip because I don't know if I've ever watched a full Billie Eilish interview, but I remember seeing a clip of hers, of them, like, it might have been one of her Vogue interviews where someone asked her, like, what would you, like, tell, like, the younger self, like, the self before you became, like, uber famous? And she was like, yeah, I'd probably say, like, why are you so sad? Like, why are you being sad? Like, just be happy. Like, and I don't know, that's always kind of stuck with me, that especially as, like, that creator, you know, like we were talking about earlier, and I know we've had these conversations of, like, why do we keep going? Like, why do we keep doing this?
When because it's hard. We love it.
Yeah.
We
and it. And at the end of the day, it is because we love it and it makes us happy. But there are, like, moments where it's like, I've caught myself just being sad because I think that, like, is almost like my, like, neutral state. Like, you know, like, you have your car in neutral and you're just cruising.
Just, yeah.
And it's like, why are we, like, doing this, you know? And you can just, like, easily just choose to, you know.
Well, I think, you know, as a creator, some of your best shit gets made in those dark places. Yeah. I don't know what it is about that sort of dark state of mind that art just freaking blossoms there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's hard to explain. I mean, like, not even just songs of, like, heartbreak, but just songs about life and mm-hmm. whatever you're dealing with in your life. If it's a difficult time for you, you know, there's just some excellent music that comes out of that space.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't think it's hard at all to write a happy song, mm-hmm. in my opinion. I mean, I think most people who are going through life are longing for something to feel with all their traumas and all their issues.
Right.
And if you can make some music that resonates, you know, with a large number of people mm-hmm. from that sort of dark space, it can bring them some sort of peace. And that's another goal of mine as well,
is yeah. to
share my experiences in my life that might not have been the most positive mm-hmm. And share it with the world and let them know that they're not alone mm-hmm. in these feelings. And, yeah, you know, just,
yeah,
it's hard to explain.
But. Yeah, no, I get you. And, I think as creators, as artists, you just feel more and that brings you to make incredible art, but it also brings you to, like, incredible low places. It'll take you, you'll have incredible highs and you'll have incredible lows. And, like, that's just kind of life, is just this wave, this roller coaster. You have your highs and then you have your lows. But as artists, like, I think it just hits a little bit harder. But I think that's kind of the role of the artist, is to feel for those who maybe can't or choose not to, and kind of create this space where, like, hey, is anyone else feeling this? Like, is anyone else?
And that's sort of the sacrifice that you make with being an artist, though. You feel more than I think the average person, because you have to be in that state of mind to create. And I think it really is taxing, you know, on your mental health maybe, but mm-hmm. again, if you're an artist, you have to do it.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I don't know, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, something that we have in common.
The camera can probably tell that we're sad boys now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Spewing our hearts out.
They already know. But something that we have in common, other than being 25-year-old independent artists trying to build something from the ground up, is that I feel like we both had this moment where we were expecting to start or begin something, and then 2020 happened. And COVID put a giant, big, you know, red X through any of our plans. And I saw recently that you posted on your Instagram story of a journal entry from 2020. And I read it because you posted it. And it's eerily similar to, like, some of my journal entries from then. And that was a low. That was a low for me personally, of being like, okay, well, I can't do anything right now. I literally have to sit here and sit with myself. And that was, I think, you know, a blessing and a curse to really face yourself in that moment, especially while, like, so much terrible stuff was going on. But I know for me, it really was like, okay, when this is, like, let's start planning. Like, let's start figuring out where I want to go, what I want to do, what do I want to build when I can, and express myself when I can. And to me, I felt like 2020 was somewhat of a launching point for that, of like kind of building that. And I gathered that from that short little journal entry you posted on your Instagram.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a time for I think most of us who are especially creators, again, we're just going to stick to the, you know, creators, but, you know, anyone really. Mm-hmm. It was a very eye-opening period, very sad and dark place for, you know, the world, really.
Yeah.
And it was the biggest thing that I took from that, and that I also wrote down in that journal entry, was it was way too much time spent alone. Mm-hmm. You know, like, humans are not meant to, we're meant to interact.
Yeah, right? We're social creatures.
Literally.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't a good place. But as a creator, again, that dark space, there was so much art from many people, actually, in fact, that was created as a result of that period. You know what I mean? I mean, it took a while before we could even perform on a stage.
Yeah.
Again, even after the pandemic was basically at its wit's end, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? It still took a while before people were able to be in large gatherings together.
Yeah.
So the whole live music thing was dead for a little while.
Right.
So it still felt like we were isolated mm-hmm. in that aspect of things. That's when you saw a lot of people sort of take off on, like, TikTok and mm-hmm. Instagram reels and stuff like that, because you literally had to create online as mm-hmm. opposed to in front of people. And I guess that brings me to this topic. I feel like, and maybe it is a result of that era.
Yeah.
The COVID years, I guess we'll call it that.
Yeah.
But I just feel like live music is unfortunately a sort of dying art.
Mm-hmm.
Not just live music, but live performance in general. There's so many people out there who I love and respect that sound great. I mean, I love their music, but it's in studio, and it's like when they get on stage, what can you do? Can you please an audience on stage live,
yeah,
in your face in real time? And that, I think, is where I started to grow during the pandemic, is I took that time to craft performing.
Mm-hmm.
On a stage, and also playing. Because, I mean, writing a song, recording a song is one thing. There's tiers to it. There's levels to it. But there's also performing. You know what I mean? That's a different level. Because the songs change live. It's too many DJs and backing tracks being played nowadays. So that's why I'm really adamant about the whole live music thing. And that's why I fell in love with the 60s, 70s era. Because those folks were really playing live music.
Yeah.
And a goal of mine is to bring that sort of thing back to light, especially mm-hmm. given we have the opportunity to play in front of people again.
Right.
So, I mean, we got to keep it alive.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, you have been doing been running around the city doing quite a bit of live shows here in Kansas City. How has that been?
It's a thrill, man. Yeah. It's exciting. I mean, first of all, the music scene, the live music scene in KC, there's something happening here. I mean, the arts in general, there's mm-hmm. something happening here. I mean, you know from your end working in film.
Yeah.
There's something happening here. I'm curious to see what's going to happen over the next few years. I mean, there's not even just in the music. I mean, there's a lot of renovations, a lot of buildings being built.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a lot of business coming to town.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the time where the arts culture here really takes off. Who knows when exactly it's going to be that it just, you know, sort of just booms, but mm-hmm. we can feel it. And
yeah,
the hairs on the back of my neck stand up every time I go out and play.
Yeah.
And I mean, just the fact that a lot of venues are willing to book local acts really, I guess, showcases the fact that, something's happening here, and they're willing to invest in the future for the arts here in KC. So I'm excited, man.
Yeah, I think live music, I mean, the music scene here in Kansas City in general, I think is really unique and really cool, and is under the radar for right now. But I think it's also tied to the local economy in an interesting way. I mean, you just performed at Chartreuse Saloon, who has just built like a stage for live music. And I think you're seeing that in other local businesses here and bars and stuff, kind of building these stages for local artists because, I mean, they bring an audience, they bring customers. And that's been interesting to kind of watch like this... I forget what those a symbiotic relationship between artist and business, you know, where it's like both are you know, making bread off one another and getting, you know, what they need and getting an audience in a place. It's been really cool, and you're definitely at the forefront. Like you're definitely at the forefront of that as one of those artists kind of being booked around the city. It's been really impressive to watch.
Got to keep the ball rolling. And it is sort of it is business at the end of the day. Because, I mean, these are established venues that, you know, I'm playing at. And, but like I said, a lot of these places are willing to invest in the arts. They're willing to take a risk. Because I think KC in the past has been notoriously known for booking a lot of out-of-state acts and a lot of touring bands and that sort of thing. And I've noticed since the pandemic that a lot of folks are, a lot of venues are really investing in the community that is KC. And it's the first time that I've seen, or maybe it's just that I'm young and I didn't pay attention to it too much before, but it's the first time that I've seen KC really invest in local acts. I mean, I've met so many great musicians and artists in KC through, you know, performing and through networking events and that sort of thing. And I also see these folks out performing as well. Mm. And it's just beautiful to see the community investing in the community. Yeah. Because that's how you build a legitimate music scene. You know, like what happened in Seattle with, you know, like Nirvana, Kurt Cobain, and Hendrix came out of Seattle too as well. Side note, you know, or any music scene for that matter. Nashville wouldn't be Nashville if Nashville didn't invest in Nashville. You know what I mean? Now they're at the forefront of, I mean, it's basically the people say the country music capital, but I think it's the live music capital of the U.S. It's not just country. I mean, it's blues and rock and all kinds of stuff. So, but yeah, if we can do that, man, if we can invest in the community and allow artists to step outside of their homes, you know, stop creating on your own and in this sort of sheltered box and actually have an opportunity to present their art to the world and to the community, man, we can really do something.
Yeah.
So.
Do you have any upcoming shows?
Yes, I've got quite a few booked for Chartreuse Saloon, which is a small pool bar in Crossroads. Love that place. Great acoustics, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just built a stage. Initially, when I performed there for the first time a little over a year ago, there was no stage, but they were interested in just getting live music in there. I did an acoustic thing, and they built a stage, and they wanted me back. And so I've booked them for the next few months. What is it, January? So I've got one there, a gig there on the 27th at Chartreuse Saloon, and then a few more over the next few months. I've got a gig at The Ship. Again, I'll be back at The Ship on February 15th.
Nice.
There's a few more, but I'll keep everyone updated on social media.
Yeah.
So.
And where can they follow you?
Instagram, and I don't really use Facebook too much, but I do use it because, I mean, it's a community of people and musicians there, so... Instagram primarily. It's just my name, Keelan Van. Facebook is the same, and I'll share updates for gigs and promo stuff there.
Awesome, man. Is there something that what would people want to know about Keelan that we haven't talked about?
I mean, I'm kind of an open book, man. Just it's nothing really about me. It's just I just like to tell people to just be themselves, man. Be yourself, be your true authentic self. You don't have to please anybody but yourself. And do everything out of kindness and love and find some peace.
Yeah.
You know, that's really it for me.
And of course, your two albums are out there on all streaming platforms.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Sunflower Paradox and Tales with Gypsy, which is the brand new album that just was released a couple weeks ago?
January 1st.
January 1st.
Yeah, 2024.
Yeah, first of the year. So, well, thanks for coming on, man.
No problem. I appreciate you for having me, man. It's a pleasure. We're good friends outside of just the arts, man.
Yeah.
You're a good guy,
mm-hmm.
and you're doing a lot for the community. And, you know, everyone that I've seen you have on the podcast is, I mean, they're just a bunch of great artists. So, and so are you. So keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. And you too.